Bet365 is paying out before the final whistle.
Check out Bet365's unrivaled early payout offer. When you bet on a team to win and they take a 17-point lead, you get paid no matter the final score. Forget the final whistle and start counting that cash. Hold up. You get early payout on parlays, too.
Download the app and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.
Beat the Elite Four, by the way. I crushed them.
Did you just do that this morning?
Just did it this morning.
I'm taking a look at your Elite Four team right now. You're with your Skeledirge. Your Tauros is looking sweet. Your Tinkaton. I fucking love that moveset. Oh, man. Dude, the Sarpafola's nutty. So what was Larry's situation in the Elite Four?
Flying. He's just a flying type.
He's flying type.
I chose Ghost as the most difficult for mine, and Larry still came out the same. Yeah.
I'm really sorry that I disappointed you.
No,
in
but
what
it was,
the Elite Four might have been.
Farafagriff? Is that how we say it?
Farafagraph,
something like that. Nasty Plot and also Agility Baton Pass into either Skeledirge or Arbolova. It was awesome. I was basically able to sweep any of the teams. But yeah, it was great. The champion was actually a little bit tricky. Also, the one before the psychic type has whatever the ability is that when my stats go up, their stats go up.
Oh!
So I didn't know that, and I pressed agility, and their speed goes up, and I was like, oh, okay, we're not doing baton pass anymore. The baton pass plan does not work. We will pivot and do something else.
That's
and
so it was fine. Funny.
And then there was another one where I was trying to do the baton pass, but I was baton passing into the flying guy, but Strapirator, whatever, comes in and intimidates. So then I don't want to baton pass anymore because my rock boy already, I don't want him to come in with a low attack.
You're going to baton pass into your Gargonal,
a physical attacker.
And then, yeah.
And his rock move is, I'm so bad with all the names, but it's the one that reduces their accuracy, Rock Tomb or whatever.
That's their speed, Rock
their
Tomb
speed,
does.
Their speed, their
yeah.
speed. It's already kind of a low power move, but I have the Hard Rock and I have Terra Rock, so I can like boost it up, but I don't want to switch him in if he's intimidated, so I have to switch
him in. That's a horrible spot to be.
There was
yeah.
a couple of situations, but it was still good.
Played around it. That's awesome. Nicely done.
This podcast is brought to you in part by Dragon Shield. Use code PLAYTOWIN5 at the affiliate link down below for 5% off to help support the show.
Welcome to the Play to Win podcast, where we talk about winning in CEDH. I'm Cam.
And I'm Dylan. This week, we're talking about the two best decks in CEDH, Atali and Blue Farm.
That's right.
Both of these decks have won big events this past weekend, yes?
They both did, yeah. One to no one's surprise, and another one to maybe a lot more people's surprise.
The Atali one was the to no one's surprise,
exactly,
right?
Exactly,
if you've
yeah.
watched Play to Win videos, you understand how this is possible.
But it's been insanely sweet recently, so
yeah.
We figured we'd spend a little bit of time talking about these two decks, especially Atali, because I know we've talked about Atali a lot recently, but there's a lot of new cards
yeah.
that Atali's seen, a lot of old cards that Atali has seen play a little bit, so I want to highlight some of them and then maybe talk a little bit about Blue Farm, because we don't get to see Blue Farm on the channel too much.
Not much.
But it's the best deck in the format.
Yeah.
And we don't even talk about it on the podcast that often.
Yeah. Real quick, what are these two decks? I'm sure most of our viewers know what these decks are in case you're just tuning in and going, what the fuck is going on in CDH?
Yeah, but it's not even really Blue Farm anymore. It's literally just Timnacrom,
I feel Timnacrom, like it's just called. Yeah. Blue Farm comes from a name that was once Mad Farm that described Timna Mardu decks. It doesn't matter why the name is what it is. Well,
it's fun. Stop trying to psychoanalyze it so much. It's just fun.
The name comes from, it's a Mad Farm because it was Bruz and Timna, and Bruz is like a farmer guy, and Timna is a weaver of sorts, so they're on a farm. It's a Mad Farm because it's Mardu. It kept its name, I think, because you were like sacrificing creatures for value and using them for Timna and then culling the weak them away, so it felt like you were like farming the things for value.
And you could do ad nauseum fast.
Right.
Like, it was the same strategy, just in different colors.
Right.
Which is why the name Farm kind of shifted.
Right. And then eventually that deck just became a Blue Farm because they just played Chrome instead of Bruz and played good cards, and it was just Blue Farm instead of Mad Farm. It was ad nauseum, sacrificing these creatures for value, using them from Timna to attack, and then casting it ad nauseum.
Just adding blue to your Mardu deck,
right.
Blue Farm.
Now the deck has kind of shifted into this weird tempo pile, basically. A lot of people call it, it's like the king of midrange. I don't know that it does everything pretty well. It has the ability to go very fast. It has the ability to grind into the late game. It can kind of do it all. I think of it as just like a tempo deck. It plays whatever role it needs needs to at the table.
That's really what it is. Yeah, it can be like the aggressor, like you said, get a really fast ad nauseum going, or set up Underworld Breach quickly by getting a couple of cards into the graveyard and then throwing Intuition out really quickly. But they're also known for not just having two of the best card advantage engines in the command zone, but then also slamming down one of the best card advantage engines that they have in the 99 too.
Yeah, Rhystic Study, Mystic Remora, this is like the deck for those cards. The whole deck is basically card in, I mean, this is most CDH decks, but this one in particular is like heavy on card advantage, light on win conditions, and then medium on interaction. So you just want to stick early grind and value in the game, like Rhystic Study, Mystic Remora, Lotho, anything that gains you mana or cards in the beginning of the game, and then when the time is right, when you find a perfect window, normally that's how I see Blue Farm wins, kind of in the mid to late game.
For me too. I feel like that's where their home is that they have all the card draw engines, so they are able to interact with anyone's quick win conditions, and they're able to find windows out of nowhere with Born Upon the Wind and Valley Flood Caller,
yeah,
so that way they can take advantage of every opportunity that is presented to them.
Yeah, and Atali is kind of, in many ways, I feel like we'll look at the lists that one's particular, but I feel like in a lot of ways, it's sort of the other end of the spectrum. Is that true nowadays, that Atali is like Turbo? It kind of defines what Turbo is right now.
It really is, yeah. It goes so fast that it's able to get around Mystic Remora and Rhystic Study. Actually, the other day at Locals, I won a game that two players had Mystic Remora for. Because you just don't care. If you win fast enough and they don't have untapped mana, the only thing that can stop Atali is Force of Will or Mind Break Trap.
Right.
And a lot of times you can play around having Mind Break Trap targeting your Atali, and then that way you can still clone Atali later.
Right.
It really ends up being the ultimate meta buster deck, because in a tournament setting where you're playing against four decks that all have good cards in them, you're
three decks.
Oh, yeah.
You know. I mean, you're playing against myself.
But
so
you're playing
a deck
that has bad cards in it, though. So,
yeah, yeah.
But, like, you're playing against three players that all have good cards in their deck,
right,
because they're playing, like, to win in a tournament.
Right.
So you're going to get really good spins, whether it's mana, whether it's tutors, or just, like, really good value creatures or other engines.
Yeah, and what's kind of funny is, like, on paper, Atali almost looks like it would be not good into Rhystic Study, because you're giving the Rhystic Study player a lot of draws. You're drawing them four cards every time. But the way that it plays out is, especially if they're tapped low on mana and you can get Atali out early, like you said, they have to have that free interaction. And even if they don't, say they have Fierce Guardianship or something, you have three spells on the stack. They can counter one of them, but sometimes the other three will be good. And that doesn't matter that they countered your one spell, because you have three others coming. So for every card that you're giving them, you are putting a full spell on the stack. So you're cheating on mana on every exchange. So it's still not you're breaking parity on the Rhystic Studies no matter what.
Exactly. So even when they do stop your one thing, you go, that's great. Like you said, I have more things, and then that can help you still pilot into more Atalis down the line then, because you're not completely walled off.
Yeah, and like there are times when Atali has to mulligan low. It's a little bit risky. Sometimes your lines involve Lion's Eye Diamond, and if they do have Mind Break Trap, you're fucked and you lose the game. Like that shit does happen,
for
right?
For sure,
that's,
yeah.
That's Turbo. But I have seen that Atali can actually be really consistent, because all you're trying to do is, and this is a short, you know, abbreviate, you know, hyperbole, but seven mana on turn two, right? This
yeah.
is the main goal. Seven mana on turn two. Seven mana on turn one is even better, of course, but seven mana on turn two, and then anything else that's around that, play to your, you know, sequence as best you can, but, like, that's your main goal, and it does that really consistently.
It's really consistent.
Yeah.
Yeah, and I feel like we've said this a lot, though. Like, the Mana Crypt, the Dockside Extortionist, and the Jeweled Lotus Bands have hurt this deck, but I think it really ended up hurting a lot of other decks a lot more.
Yeah.
And there's just so many powerful ramp options in Magic in general in
yeah.
these two colors, like the two ramp colors that you don't need them to still be able to get insanely good burst of mana. Like Geosurge has been an insane card for me.
Yeah.
And I've only really liked it since I've been playing Rituals more, which is something that I feel like 3 months ago when we did the Atali episode,
yeah.
the Atali overview, I was not on that train. And now I'm like super hype on them, because mana dorks don't get you turned to Atali as consistently.
The speed is like just so much more important, right? Like you want the speed. That makes total sense. Should we look at the lists that won?
Let's take a look
take a peek at what the modern Atali, what's happened in the past month or so that has kind of propelled Atali, because honestly, and I know it's a small sample size, it's just a few tournaments or whatever that Atali has done well at, but to me, Itali is feeling closer and closer like a legitimate tier one deck. Like, it's not a joke anymore. It's not a weird tier three deck that can get wins sometimes. Like, it's a deck that I'm as afraid of as any other deck in CDH.
I totally feel that. I feel like it's getting a lot of the respect that it deserves now when, I play against people. People aren't just like, oh, it's just an Itali. What are you going to spin into shit?
No, it's like it's just like probably they're just like the best storm deck in the format. And do you even play any cards that have storm on them?
Do I play? No, I don't.
No Grape Shot, right?
No Grape Shot. That would be bad. Yeah.
That would be bad. Although sometimes it would, you know, it would never be good. You don't think Grape Shot? No, it would
no,
be so bad.
No, I don't think it ever would
so
be
bad.
Good. Yeah, let me throw out one real quick just because here's one question that I've answered a lot playing Itali is when I spin into an X-Tutor, everyone always says when I don't cast the X-Tutor, oh, you don't play Arbor Elf? No!
No, I don't play that
card.
It'd
be so bad. A land that comes into play and I can't use it?
You need the cards to be good as close to 100% of the time, right? Even if a card is like reasonable 40% of the time, that means it's unreasonable 60% of the time. That's so bad and not good. You know what I mean? And that's probably even more exaggerated odds than that with Arbor Elf. No, that's not the name. Dryad Arbor.
It really is. Yeah, I think so. Yeah.
What are some of the lists from one of the decks that won?
There's a couple of standout cards to me that are things that I'm not playing. Some of them I'm considering. Some of them are just like very new.
Can we shout out the user? Is there like a username in the Mox field? Who is this person?
Big Bear. They're Big Bear on the Itali Discord.
Hell
They're the person
Big Bear.
That won. And Cam Daddy D also won with Itali the Friday of the same event at like a little smaller
shindig
that they were doing.
Shout out both of you Itali pilots.
Freaking sweet. Yeah. One of the cards that I'm seeing a lot more Itali decks playing that I feel like I need to start adopting is Emerald Charm.
Ooh, yes. I've been thinking about this a lot for Yoshimaru Thrasios.
Really?
This destroys an enchantment and it untaps a Gaia's Cradle. That's this both stuff that I want to do.
Target global enchantment
so
specifically.
So Heuristic Study specifically. Yeah. You know, Heuristic Study, Mystic Remora, something like that.
Exactly. Which I know we were just talking about how Itali can win through Heuristic Study and Mystic Remora, but a lot of times you don't want to have to worry about them.
Yes.
So if you have the extra mana and you can get rid of it before you end up going off, I think this is a great tool for that while also being able to untap your Gaia's Cradle, which some Itali decks have leaned off of Gaia's Cradle, but I still think it's a super important land to have.
Yeah, and although you can get to like the meat of your deck through Heuristic Study, a lot of the times you would like to finish on Food Chain if possible.
True.
It's just easier to do that than go for the dual caster. So having Emerald Charm as like a, oh, this can help with that, is I think is nice. And then also sometimes it's a ritual. It makes Gaia's Cradle be insane.
Even the lands that tap for two mana, like this also makes your Ancient Tomb tap for 3 mana, weirdly enough. So there's a lot of like weird upsides in Itali you have to look out for like
Yeah.
Because Crop Rotation does that too. Crop Rotation lets you sacrifice your forest for Ancient Tomb. That's a 1 mana green colorless Rite of Flame is what that is. So you gotta look out for weird things like that in Itali, and I think
because
any
way to make,
really good at that.
Any way to make one extra mana can sometimes be the difference of winning the game, right? Like any way to just like, this just makes me one more mana, but that makes 6 into 7 and now we can go. It can make a huge difference.
Honestly, there's a lot of 6 into 7 situations here because Open the Omen Paths is in this deck too.
Can you remind me what this does?
Oh, you never knew what this did. I promise you that. This is 2 and a red for an instant that you choose one. Either you can add 2 mana of any one color and 2 mana of any other one color to spend on only creatures or enchantments.
Wait, how much mana does this cost?
It's 3 mana. So
three
it's
mana.
3 mana to make 4, but you can make 2 red and 2 green.
Okay.
Or you can have creatures you control get +1/+0. You're never going to get that. It's just Open the Omen Paths there.
You play this card?
No, I don't.
Oh, some people do.
But some people do. This is just like another ritual. Like it's a piratic ritual that makes you red, red, green, green. Essentially, like it's the rate of piratic ritual.
It's a +1 ritual, yeah.
Like you can use it to cast Eternal Witness a little bit more easily if you need to get like Jessica's Will back
the
or something.
The big mana rituals do make a little bit more sense in Itali when you flip into them, right?
But it's like, still only 1 mana. Like Seething Song, Geosurge, they're both things that make way more than the 1 extra mana, but there's just more piratic rituals and like Rite of Flame rates in the deck now that still feel a little bit low to me, but also just like a lot of times I look at a hand and I go, oh, this makes 6 mana. If I had a way to make one more, this would
and
be
especially
it.
Like you're playing a couple ways to kind of break parity on that. You're playing, I mean, some of these lists I've seen play Goblin and Archomancer and other ways that reduce the costs of spells so that your rituals end up making more mana than they look. Like I said, also when you flip them off of Itali, then they allow you to make the extra mana for the Twin Flame that's still in your hand after you play the Itali and
although,
then you go again.
I will say, I have not been liking Goblin and Archomancer so much. Really? And I think Big Bear agrees because it's not in this list either.
Oh, okay.
I think that is just a little bit too much.
Is it like you need to get red and green on turn one for it to be relevant on turn two, and red and green on turn one is hard?
That is the thing. Yeah.
Is that the thing,
it's
maybe?
Really tough to get it out on turn one and then also have things in my hand. Like, I need two things in my hand to be discounted to make that worth
it. Make it worth it.
Which means that I need to have two rituals, and even then, that's one mana gets me three, which brings me to two to get me five, and then I have one other land, and that's still six. So I still need one other spell.
That makes sense. Maybe this is Goblin.
And a tally costs less, though, so I could just cast a tally off of that, I guess.
You could do that. Is that something?
I just haven't had this come up. I feel like I've had Goblin and Archomancer in my deck for two months.
The stars have to align kind of perfectly for it to be that, you know, 10 out of 10.
I feel like I'm a conductor all of a sudden, yeah.
Maybe that's what it is. Maybe if a tally was still leaning more into like a solid turn three a tally as your main goal, this is a little bit better. But your mindset has kind of shifted, because I feel like 3 months ago your mindset was, let me get an insane Itali on turn three rather than turn two.
And that's protected.
And now it feels like you're back to your B plan. Your A plan is turn two Itali. Yeah, your A plan is like, turn one Itali.
I feel like I need less protection, weirdly enough, just because of how the ways CEDH games normally play out.
Yeah.
Because there's less Dranith Magistrate, and because there's less people that are willing to Pactive Negation when they only have two mana up. Like, even some of the free mana that they have, they don't even want to use, or they just straight up can't use.
Right, yeah.
So I think, I don't remember exactly where this was going, but yeah, I don't feel like I need protected Itali's as much.
Is that where you're at right now, where it's like, ideally, you want to go as fast as possible?
Yeah, I mulligan hands that don't have seven mana in them. If you are a seven or a six card hand and don't make seven mana, I don't want you.
And then once you're at five, you would keep like six mana in a five?
I would start to look at six mana hands. I still don't know if I like five mana hands, but like if I find land, ritual, geosurge, like I'm into that. If I find Jeskha's Will somewhere, land, ritual, Jeskha's Will.
Basically makes almost any hand a snapkeeper.
I can mulligan to I can mulligan to three and keep basic forest, LED, and Mana Vault, and I can be super happy with that turn to Itali.
Yeah. So mulliganing aggressively has gotten you a lot of success.
For sure, yeah. And mulligans very well. Although here's a card I think fits more of like the long-term plan that we didn't... I purposefully excluded from the Edge of Eternity set review because I didn't think I would end up playing it. And lo and behold, here's good old Lavendo Brush Razor here.
Remind me what this one does.
You never knew what it did. It's two and a red for an Insect Warrior 2/2 that says whenever you sacrifice a non-token permanent, exile the top card of your library, and during your turn, as long as you've sacrificed a non-token permanent this turn, you can play cards exiled with this creature.
What are we doing with this card?
And then it also says tap and sacrifice a land to add red.
Oh, so it's two mana or three?
It's three mana.
It's three. Yeah. I see why you didn't want to play
that. That's kind of why, because if I'm moving away from Professional Facebreaker, I feel like I'm moving away from Avendo. What I like about this is that it's kind of like Professional Facebreaker.
Yeah.
And Orcish Lumberjack, kind of like all in the same card.
Kind of, yeah. But it's a worse version of all of them a little bit.
It kind of does
a little bit of all of those
things. Like, the way that it plays out is that you sacrifice a land, so you have three mana from the land and then Avendo, and then that exiles a top card of your library, and it just gives you extra advantage, I guess.
It's sort of free on mana. Like, it's a suspend, but then it gives you the mana back. Kind of, not really, but like,
saying
it'll
that
feel
it
like
makes
that.
You three mana because it's giving you the.
You'll have three mana by the time you're done activating the ability.
Exactly.
Right? Yeah.
So that makes sense. Still down a land, but still up a card.
Right. And if you're not planning on like passing the turn, you want to win the game, that's like fine if you sack the land. Who cares?
That could be good. You know? And like on turn two, there's a lot of scenarios where you untap with this, and then this is five mana that you have.
How much? What's the mana value? The cost?
It's two and a red.
Two and a red. So maybe it's a little bit easier to cast than red green, like the Goblin and Archomancer.
It is easier to get out on turn one, right? For sure. Yeah, Ancient Tomb and City of Traders like turns this on for turn one way more easily.
Yeah. So that kind of makes sense that it's easier to get out on turn one, and then turn two it has the possibility to like let you roll into stuff. And there are some other cards that you could have in your deck that would also trigger for an extra card exiled, right?
Yeah, Orcish Lumberjack would do that too. Actually, there's quite a bit, like Eldritch Evolution, fetch lands, yeah. Sacrificing a non-land permanent.
It just gives you like a little extra
that's
reach.
That's weird. I didn't think about that.
Fetch lands, that's good.
Yeah, as long as you've sacrificed a non-token permanent.
Non-token.
If you sacrifice your fetch land, yeah, that gets you a land. You exile a card, then you tap a Vendo to sacrifice another land.
The exiled card, can you play it? Can you play it if it's a
it
land?
It is play, yeah.
So you can
so
play
if
it
you
if it's a land.
Find a replacement land. That okay. is really good.
Yeah.
I think there is a lot more upside to this than I thought. I would also like to note that this could have won games in Itali because it was the seventh card in your hand, and now it was easy to put under Chrome Mox, and you didn't have to think about that.
That's
too
always
hard.
True. We're in a singleton format. It's hard to take a lot of weight from like one tournament, one deck doing well at a tournament because,
yeah.
like, who? What if they never saw that card? You know,
they
what
might
I mean?
Have never seen it. Like again,
who
this
knows?
Could have just been like yeah. something that rotted away in a hand. It could have been the reason why he mulliganed a seven card hand, right? Yeah. Like, there's a lot of things that I want to consider about. That too, but I will note there is a lot more upside to this than I initially thought of
yeah.
for this card. The more that I think about it, the more that I like it.
It's a little bit of a, it has the, what's the raptor's name? The dinosaur?
Oh, Hunting Velociraptor.
It has a Hunting Velociraptor issue where if
yeah.
you do draw it late, it's kind of a bad top deck. It's fine in your opening hand. It's actually kind of only good in your opening hand, but then it's pretty bad if you draw it on turn
and
two
really
or three.
Really telegraphed,
right?
Too.
Yeah, yeah, really telegraphed. But I think worth testing for Itali pilots. It makes sense to me.
I really like that they're still on Roaming Throne and Wandering Archaic too.
Yes.
Because they're two cards that even though I decided to speed my deck up, I felt like these were two things that have been too powerful for me to not want to include.
Wandering Archaic feels so perfect for Itali. It's
oh,
like the
yeah.
exact thing of like, I don't want to Itali right now. Let me do this instead because it's the opposite of Itali.
Yeah.
I don't know if that makes sense, but that's how it feels. You know what I mean? Like, I can't play Itali because I know he's going to get stopped. Everyone has already drawn cards. I was too late. I mulliganed, whatever. Like, it's not going to happen. But this will allow me to like inch back into the game, me being the pretend Itali player. Like, it allows you to inch back into the game while also being protection for your Itali later on, right?
It's like having a silence for everyone's turn.
Yeah.
At least a Ranger Captain of Eos.
Basically.
For everyone's turn because they don't want to spend this extra stuff, and it is what's going to let you stay alive so that way if you can only make 5 mana,
yeah.
so long as it wasn't with your Grim Monolith, you're able to go to your next turn and then like use that time, that tempo, in order to get you to the
yeah.
Itali that you needed.
And it is a very powerful card, so it is going to be like a lightning rod. People are going to want to respond to it if it's on the stack. They're going to want to kill it, but you can also use that to your advantage. Like, I think you did something similar to me recently with this, where you had the dual caster line and you put the Wandering Archaic on the stack, and I go, ooh, maybe I should get rid of the Itali now because I know Cam has a Twin Flame and is ready to do the Itali or whatever. And so I do that. I get rid of the Itali, regrettably, because I don't want to. I don't want you to copy it. And then you go, haha, here's Dual Caster Mage and the Twin Flame that I, and then, you know, whatever. Like,
yeah.
It allows you to kind of like suck up the interaction out of the another player's hand because they don't have the information that you have that you want them to hit the one or a cake because you
thing.
Want something else to survive,
it
right?
It makes your opponents give themselves opportunities to make mistakes.
Yeah.
And those kind of cards are really strong in CEDH.
Exactly. Especially that its other plan of just like gaining you value and protecting your Itali later on is also a plus.
Exactly. Yeah. So much good stuff. And Roaming Throne has just continued to impress me. Did you know that the backside of Itali's infect counters shit is a triggered ability?
That's so funny. 22 poison counters.
Yeah. It's not just enter the battlefield triggers that are doubled. It's all triggers
of permanence,
your, yeah.
right? Yeah.
So all of your dinosaur triggers get doubled. So it's 22 poison counters they have to account for.
What does that do? Usually probably nothing, but Itali's thing is trample, so I think it means that they have to block with like way more creatures or something.
They now have to find 12 toughness of creatures to block with,
right?
Instead of 2 toughness of creatures
right.
to block
yeah,
with.
So
yeah,
so that does make it a lot more difficult.
Actually, it's that would still kill them. You have to find 13.
Sure.
To only have 9 poison.
Yeah,
then.
Which
yeah.
a lot of CDH decks are just not going to have. Obviously, this is not the main plan for Itali. In fact, it is your plan Z. It's your last thing. It's your, oh, fuck, nothing else happening. There
I
are times
spun into Roaming Throne and then had to flip Itali. Yeah. That is how that happened. Don't yeah. think that this was any
there,
other way.
There is a real thing of like, fuck, I already let the blue farm player draw too many cards. Oh, wait, I can just kill them. And now all of their counterspells are gone. And I can beat these other two non-blue decks because they're not playing counterspells, right? right?
It is a nice spot to be. The problem is that you are now committed to that plan.
Because
the clones that you have, you can draw Twin Flame. You can copy a Tali, but it's the Infect version that doesn't do what you want it to
do. Yeah, so that's not nearly as good. So it does fuck up your whole A through Y plan. But it is a Z plan. It's there. And it's so, sometimes when you do that, it's like so crazy that like, oh yeah, you can just like, this is your backup plan. Is
you
can
take a player
out. Yeah, take a player out in 2 to 3 turns.
No wonder why I like Jessica Ishai so much.
Can we, do you have other cards to talk about from this list? We should talk, because I want to talk about the Avatar card.
Yeah, because we pause and come back? Cards that maybe Atali should be putting into
maybe
their
Atali
deck
should
that will
be
coming out.
Because this is a new card that's not out yet. It's not coming out in the next set. In fact, it's coming out in the set after that, which is the Avatar set.
Yes, and you might be wondering, Cam, Dylan, you guys never really talk about cards before the set review comes out.
We've switched. We've decided we're not doing that anymore. Cards are always coming out. The set releases don't matter anymore. Will you do proxying? Cards come out every single day now.
As far as I'm concerned, if you are playing against me in a CEDH pod and we're not at a tournament, which is 99% of the CEDH that I play, you can play cards that haven't come out yet that you've proxied.
As long as
I don't care.
As long as they're officially spoiled by Wizards, we're good to go.
You
even
can't
if it's
make
not
them
officially.
Up. If you made them up, you know, I don't want to play against your custom cards.
But the sets come out so constantly now, they're just always coming out. So we're going to talk about cards as they come out. We'll do another formal review once the, you know,
oh,
what
I'm
happens,
not done with set reviews.
But we're going to talk about new cards when they seem good. Like this one, Redirect Lightning. Is that just what it's called?
Redirect Lightning.
Have we never had a card that's called that? That sounds like such a magic name of a card.
But it's perfect for Avatar. Because this is literally the move.
Is that what it's called, Redirect Lightning?
This is literally the move that Iroh teaches Zuko. He teaches him how to redirect lightning.
That's so
sick. And this is what you do. You channel it into you, and you have to channel it back out of you then. And that's exactly what Zuko's doing here.
This card
it's
seems
perfect
good.
That it's a lesson, because it's a lesson that he is taught by Iroh.
That is really flavorful.
It's so flavorful. Yeah, so let's talk about what this card does. This is a red mana.
Just one red mana.
Just one red mana for an instant lesson that says, as an additional cost to pay the spell, okay, well, maybe it's a little bit more. Well, you can either pay 5 life or 2 generic mana.
5 life is kind of a lot for some decks. It's kind
free.
Nothing for other decks.
Yeah, in a lot of decks, it's basically free. It's basically just one red. And it lets you change the target of target spell or ability with a single target.
With a single target. This doesn't help against Mindbreak Trap.
This doesn't help against Mindbreak Trap. So this is like having a red misdirection that also lets you hit abilities, because I think Misdirection only lets you hit spells with a single target.
Yeah, it's kind of like Deflecting Swat. It allows you to redirect spells or abilities, except Deflecting Swat can allow you to redirect a spell with any number of targets.
Yeah.
This is only one target.
So there's a very few number of cards. We've already talked about Mindbreak Trap, but This Town Ain't Big Enough is the first card that I think of that has 2 targets.
That actually has seen a little bit of play in the Rock Thrust decks. I have
seen
it. Exactly,
yeah.
It seems all right.
I still think that this is going to hit most things that you want it to hit, especially because it also hits abilities of things. So like you can redirect an Emile trigger and then really fuck up someone's turn, and maybe that tempo is all that you need.
Yeah.
This is going in a Tali, because a 1 mana redirect a counterspell to something else is still going to be really nice.
It's nice that it can help on the stack. If someone's trying to counter your spell, you can redirect lightning, the counterspell to redirect lightning, and the counterspell will fizzle because your redirect lightning will have resolved by the time their counterspell is already coming back at it, but it still does the job of getting the counterspell off of the thing that you want it to protect. But it's also good against spot removal. So if they're looking to Swords to Pasture your dual caster mage or something, you can redirect lightning that as well. So I love that it's helpful in like 2 different situations.
Yeah, me too. I think that the overall flexibility that this card has is going to make this a staple in CEDH.
Yeah.
And another reason to like put red mana sources back in your deck. Like, I wouldn't hate Rogthras for putting this in their deck, and like maybe the Song of Creation versions are going to get a little bit better because they have more reasons to want red pips.
I wonder how good it is in comparison to like other counter spells. Like, is it effectively the same? Because it can't stop like Thassa's Oracle. It can't stop Demonic Consultation.
True,
you know what I mean? Like, it is a little bit worse than some counter spells. So if you already have access to blue, I'm a little bit less sure on this card. I still think it's close, because if you have blue, you're still playing Deflecting Swat.
Yeah, that's a good
point. And
this is
Deflecting Swat for 1 mana.
I guess a better comparison for this card than Deflecting Swat is Bolt Bend. Because Bolt Bend is another 1 mana redirect, but has a stipulation.
You have to have your commander out already.
And specifically a 4-power creature.
A 4-power creature is what you have to have already.
Yeah, exactly.
Which to me is like, that's way, way worse.
Also, its full value rate is way worse because it's more. Three additional mana instead of just the two.
Yeah, with Bullpen, you have to already commit something to the board. Some decks want to do that, but you have to do it first. With this, nothing has to touch the board yet. You can protect the Tali that's on the stack rather than protect the Tali when it's in play. So I think it's much better than that. And like Rog'Sai, I'm not sure about it. The five life does, like,
I kind of matters. It's close, in your Necropotence decks, I think.
Five life is kind of a lot for Necropotence. There's five cards I could have drawn, and I already have access to blue. I have Counterspell, so I'm less sure about it there. But in Atali, it's perfect. In Obnixilis, it's perfect. In any non-blue deck that's playing red, I think this is an awesome card. And even some blue decks are still going to want it.
Slight number of blue decks, I think. The more that we're talking about this, I think I am going to agree with you. I think that there are going to be a lot of blue decks that go, I don't need this thing.
I don't need this, right?
But like VV, when it gets you a VV trigger, and I'm just looking for more things that are going to move removal away from it. Like, I think that this is something that I'm super happy to have. I don't care about my life total.
One weird thing, it can redirect an ability. So something that is like doesn't make any sense. If you have a fetch land out and a VV out, you can fetch and then redirect lightning your fetch land ability. It won't do anything, but it's a spell that you can cast. Because deflecting swat, you can deflecting swat something that...
No, it has to have a single target.
It has to have a single target.
Yeah, so there are going to be things that...
I was thinking like a way to get a free VV spell, whereas a counter spell wouldn't have been able to. But
there are
going to
be things where it's not going
to
be like Pyroblast, where you can just fire it off on something to get your Storm Crown off. In that same way that like Red Elemental Blast still needs the thing to hit. It's definitely a little bit more limited than what I think we're used to, because I'm on Misdirection in VV, and I know there's a lot of times in my Misdirection history where I think it does something that it can't, and I go, fuck, and then I have to put it back in my hand. And then everyone knows that I have it. So I'm a little bit nervous about that with this card, too. You just got to be a little bit cautious and reread the card every time you go to play it. But you should do that with all your cards. That's a lesson that I should learn too.
Non-Necropotence decks and non-blue decks who are playing red, absolutely. If you're playing those things, maybe. Atali, I think, definitely.
Atali, if you're a deck that does what something like Atali does, yeah, that's it.
Are there any other Atali cards from this deck that we want to talk about? Any new Atali stuff that you want to bring up?
We have while we're on the spoiler train here, we're just going to keep talking about other cards that could go in Atali that the community in general has been talking about, too. I feel like Red's been getting a lot of love recently.
Yeah, what do we got?
Well, I say that, and then we're going to trash this card.
Okay.
Spiderpunk.
Oh, yeah.
This is one in a red for a 2/1 legendary spider hero human from the upcoming Spider-Man set.
Yeah, not the Airbender set.
Not the Airbender set, no.
Different sets.
That'd be a funny crossover.
Yeah, I can't wait.
There's four lines of text on Spiderpunk.
This is a lot.
Yeah, Riot's one of them, which means that he enters with your choice of a +1/+1 counter or haste. Other spiders you control have Riot. Okay, never mind. He has three lines of text.
Okay.
Spells and abilities can't be countered, and damage can't be prevented.
It's strange, because for CDH, this is a trap. I do not think this card is good. It does powerful things, so it's going to be alluring. In 1v1 formats, I think there's a world where something like this could actually be quite good. It allows you to get through the One Ring protection. It allows you to make all your stuff uncounterable. That's all great. In CDH, it allows your opponent stuff to also be uncounterable. So even if for some reason you get your thing to be uncounterable, you resolve your uncounterable Underworld Breach, now they have an uncounterable Nature's Claim that can destroy your Underworld Breach and you're still screwed.
Or even worse, they have an uncounterable Born Upon the Wind on top of your Underworld Breach. It can just present their own wind that's uncounterable on top of you.
Yeah, I think a lot of the times, honestly, just like holding up a mana for guttural response or something is going to be much better use of your cards than casting Spiderpunk or something like that. The Spiderpunk is going to be too risky. In casual, Spiderpunk is going to be awesome. If you just like don't like counterspells and you're playing casual commander, fuck yeah, this card slaps, because now it means that the counterspell player can counter anyone's things and everyone gets to have casual fun. That's awesome for you. I love that. For CDH, I think it's way too risky. There could be worlds where it's going to feel like a defense grid and it'll get you the game. That's going to happen sometimes for sure. I think the risk of it blowing up in your face is, for me, it seems too high to want to try it out just yet.
I think I totally agree. I think your point about it being really good in 60 card formats makes a lot of sense.
Right? And like the big red legacy decks, maybe? I don't know.
Yeah,
do they
especially
want...
because they don't have so many ways to win at instant speed either. Like, just from the way that the meta pans out, I think Spiderpunk is going to be way worse than Defense Grid. Like, what makes Defense Grid good is that people can't cast spells on your turn because they don't have the mana for that.
Not only can they not stop you, they cannot Born Upon the Wind on top of you.
Exactly, yeah. but I think for as awesome and flavorful as this card is, I think this is going to allure a lot of people to want to play it and then end up screwing themselves over, and because there will be times that they can win with this, and people will
and
go,
you're going to remember those times.
They'll remember those times more than they remember losing because of this.
Right.
Or specifically losing because they didn't want to cast this. They could have, but they didn't. And they don't lose the game specifically because Spider-Punk was in play, but you lost the game because you had a card that wasn't relevant in Spider-Punk because you didn't want to lose the game or something like that.
Yeah.
I feel like situations like that will happen with this card.
Yeah. So I think overall this is going to be a pass for me, but don't worry. And just in case you missed this episode, we'll talk about it again in the upcoming Spider-Man set review.
Yes. Yeah, definitely.
Those are the main Atali cards that I wanted to talk about. There's, like, you mentioned guttural response, which is actually something that a lot
of
people
are playing. Do you want to talk about that one real quick?
We should. Yeah, we can move into that. Yeah.
What does guttural response do? Let me see if I can remember it. It is a Gruul hybrid mana. It costs one total mana value, and it says counter targets blue instant.
That's exactly what it does.
Fuck yeah.
This is just like Atali protection.
It's like dispel. It's like kind of dispel, right?
That is what dispel is. 99% of the time.
99% of the time,
right?
That's what it is. Dispel sometimes counters the Swords to Plowshare. You're going to miss out on that, I guess. But most of the time, what it can do is it's a really good counterspell for counterspells, which is what this is.
That's true. Yeah. We used to like dispel for being able to counter ad nauseum, but Necropotency is way more play than
ad
nauseum now.
To me, it feels ad nauseum has weirdly moved to like the plan B of any of those decks. They're more focused on the Necropotency, and ad nauseum is for when Necro doesn't resolve.
Because you can see more cards with Necro, right?
On average, yes.
Because when you look at the bottom of your Mox field, even when it accounts for ad nauseum being out of your deck, your mana value on average is always greater than one.
Yeah.
Which means that you're always losing on average a little bit more than one life for each card that you look at.
I would say a resolved ad nauseum normally draws around 20 cards for me. Like if I'm gonna like gut, it's around 20. Sometimes it's 25, depends on the deck. Sometimes, you know, but a resolved Necro, if you do it when you want to do it, which is on turn one. By turn two, you have spent 30 life, 35 life, depending. So you've drawn like guaranteed like 30 cards by turn two rather than like the 20 that you would off ad nauseum. Either way, dispel's a little bit worse because it can't counter ad nauseum quite as much.
And guttural response is even worse because it can't counter either of those two.
Either of those things.
But it does protect your Atali, which I think it's just so funny that this is where we're at.
It is, yeah, I agree.
So funny.
But it's a tool. Sometimes I feel like I say like the cards that are bad cards in all CDH decks but are only good because of colors, these are trap cards. You shouldn't play these cards. You should just play cards that are good cards. Autumn's Veil is a perfect example of this. Nobody plays Autumn's Veil because it's not a good card, but sometimes low color decks have to play Autumn's Veil, they feel, because it's the closest they got. I feel like this is often sometimes a trap, and you should instead just play good cards that work well with your commander, not cards that are bad imitations of other cards. This isn't true across the board. Everything, you know what I mean? Sometimes you need to play Autumn's Veil or whatever. And to me, this spell kind of feels like that. But
that's how I am with it too, because it is hard, especially the more turbo you are, it's harder to have that extra mana up to protect what you're doing too. Like you make exactly 7 mana so much of the time.
Yeah, but then there are times when like you're going last and 3 players all played Mystic Amora on turn 1. Then maybe you say, oh shit, okay, now maybe I can wait out one or two of these Mystic Amoras by waiting until turn 3 and having 8 mana on turn 3 and doing it then. Like there are situations where you'll need to do that. You'll need to recover or something.
Sometimes your turn 2 Atali gets stopped and you have to plan for your turn 4 or 5 Atali.
Yeah.
And this kind of card is really good for your turn 4 or 5 Atali.
Yeah, because I feel like the turn 4 or 5 Atali is because you specifically went out and got Jessica's Will or Treasonous Ogre somehow. So you have a bunch of mana by the time you do turn 4 or 5. So having the protection for the 4 or 5 one is a little bit easier to do.
I think so. Yeah, I think so. So that's where this card kind of shines a little bit more. I would want to mulligan a lot of openers that probably have this if they're not going to allow me to get my quick Atali, but this is something that like when I Atali into Rhystic Study and the One Ring, I want to see this as a way to like help me win the game then for when even like Atali doesn't win, Atali just gets it out and I just get some advantage. When I have to untap for turn 3, I really like it then.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah, definitely.
Oh, that's something I think I underestimate is Atali just gets you advantage and then you have to pass the turn.
Which happens.
And then you untap and you win the game.
Yeah.
Because everyone goes, what are we going to do about Atali?
Yeah, Atali didn't get a win, but Atali got a Rhystic Study and a Smothering Tithe and two other mana dorks or something.
Yeah.
And then
don't do what they want to do on their turn two.
Right. So then you get a free restart, basically.
Atali's such a good deck.
Atali's so good.
It just preys on CEDH so well.
It puts everyone in like a lose-lose situation. You have to choose the best out of two shitty situations. We had a game last night. It happened where I should have Flare of the Blue Flare. Flare.
Oh, Flare of Denial.
I should have Flare of Denial. Flare of Denial?
Yeah.
I should have Flare of Denial, sacrificing one of my blue creatures, but I didn't. I was like, I can't lose too much. And so I did that, and Cam had something else, and I would have had the ability to Cloud of Fairies, to cycle the Cloud of Fairies to draw a card. The card that I drew was Swan Song, but because I didn't sacrifice and instead I paid full mana on the counterspell, I couldn't then use the Swan Song to counter your thing. And like it puts me in the situation where like I got, and maybe that's bad deck building because I'm playing Flare of Denial, I'll admit that, but it puts me in bad situations where like I gotta fuck my shit up just to maybe not die to you. And then if I don't do that, I'm punished. But if I do that, I still fucked up my shit somehow.
Yeah, that's the thing.
You know?
Like, you're kind of damned if you do, damned if you don't, either way.
Yeah, Atali's great. Are there any other cards from the winning list that you want to talk about?
No, that's pretty much it. I think that's pretty much it.
Do you want to talk about Blue Farm a little?
We have some time to talk about Blue Farm, yeah.
Well, yeah, what's Blue Farm doing recently? As far as I'm aware, there haven't been a ton of new includes. I know we're doing Valley Floodcaller and stuff. I know some lists are on Delny, but not a ton. And most of them are kind of just on, like, generic good stuff CDH, right?
Yeah, I mean, that's pretty much what this deck is. And funnily enough, there was a top four that had four blue farms in the top four, which is so hilarious. So I want to take a look at the winning deck list here and just shout out a couple cards. This one's on Delny, funnily enough.
The winning list.
The winning list is on Delny, yeah. The winning list is on Mayhem Devil.
Cool.
Which is a card we have not seen since the Dockside ban.
Oh, okay. I guess that's like more Bowmastery type board control-y things.
Which, in conjunction with a Bowmaster, is really good. That's a lot of damage.
You can work with your opponents, sacrifice your fetch land. I'll use the Mayhem Devil to ping off somebody else's thing.
Things that make your opponents do stuff not advantageous for
them.
Yeah.
With your fetch land on the stack, now you don't have blue mana anymore. I'm going to win over top. Right? Like, I feel like there's like weird situations you can...
Dude, that's so funny. Yeah. And then they're on to Taru too.
More Treasure Makers, Mayhem.
Yeah, more Treasure Makers, which I think if you are in a top four that's all blue farm, I feel like that's where you want to see that card.
That's so good.
I feel like I have not been, maybe because this is, I'm an Atali player.
Yeah.
Every pod that I've seen Taru in, it has not been good.
Yeah, your viewpoint on the CDH is much different, I feel.
It's really weird.
Yeah. Yeah, it's like very skewed.
Yeah.
Well, every game of CDH, I either win or I have no cards in my hand by turn four. What is everyone talking about? Mid-range hell.
Every time I spit into Taru, this card sucks. Yeah. Why do I want this?
Yeah, it's funny.
Oh, man.
Is this one on High Fairy, the 4-mana flash High Fairy Trickster?
No, the creature curve stops at 3.
Stops
in
at
this
3,
deck.
Okay.
Yeah, but they are on the Valley Floodcaller, though.
Toxic Deluge?
No Deluge. Very low on the sorceries, just in general.
Still Ad Nauseam?
No Ad Nauseam.
Necro.
Yes, Ad Nauseam. Yes, Ad Nauseam and Yes, Necro.
Okay,
so those are like your two main humongous card draw engines. It's very standard. I shouldn't say it's very standard. We should be talking about what the fuck is in this deck so people know what to expect. Yeah. In terms of interaction, there's a couple of other notable things I want to point out. A little bit of extra bounce in Snapback,
which I think is
very interesting. Yeah, I've liked Snapback in Vivi quite a bit. Just like having an extra way to...
Is this deck on Vivi?
This deck is not on Vivi, no.
I've seen some blue farm lists trying with Vivi a little bit.
I think it's doing Mayhem Devil instead.
That makes
I feel
sense.
Like, you
kinda
don't
want one or the other.
Yeah,
probably.
I kind of want one or the other. But I feel like I really like Vivi for blue farm.
If you're trying to do tournament CDH, if you're doing TDH, I do feel like the pitch spells get even better when everyone's doing Rhystic Study. When you have 15 cards in your hand, but the one thing that you need is the mana to cast them, having a free spell is really important. And then when you've drawn 15 cards, pitching a blue one doesn't really matter because you've drawn so many other ones. So I love Snapback. I love Misdirection, Commandeer. I think these cards are like great tournament
cards
right now.
They're going up, yeah. I don't necessarily like Commandeer as much in Timna Krom
when
I have so many
other
colors.
When you have Ad Nauseam. Yeah.
Yeah,
it's
that too.
It's a card, I guess, but you're right. Yeah, not for Blue Farm.
Yeah, so in Blue Farm in particular, there are a couple things they have to keep in mind, but I really like the Bounce spell that's free as an option because so many times, like, you're only safe because you're... counter spells are free.
Right.
But then like you draw into the Flood Maw and you're like, God damn, if I had one mana, like I could save us from this Underworld Breach that's already resolved. But like having, even though Snapback only hits creatures, like I still like that it gives you that free option to be able to interact with someone's combo when you had to tap out for your the One Ring or something.
The difference between free and one, and especially two, is like it's so hard to even comprehend how much different that is of having the free thing. It allows you to keep tempo. Like we've talked about it so many, you know, like free is so powerful. So I think that's a great include now for Blue Farm.
Yeah, I think so too.
And it allows them to stay alive. The deck is kind of slowish, weirdly. So anything that can like allow them to stay alive while tapping out for Esper Sentinel on turn one, I think that's good. They want to tap out on their turn for engines, so they need free interaction to stay alive.
Yeah, exactly. Otherwise, I like the utility of like a lot of other rituals in here too. There's Rain of Filth in this deck. We were talking about Rain of Filth
good
a little bit last
ritual.
Week. Yeah, really good late game ritual, which this is a really good deck to make 6 or 7 mana off of your Rain of Filth with. And then they are on offer you can't refuse, which I kind of like in this deck in particular because it does go both ways of helping you go fast when you need the ramp and also helping you be protected, even though I have been really down on an offer you can't refuse recently.
Yeah, the card, it's so, because when it's bad, it's so bad.
It feels really bad into so many matchups nowadays.
It's pretty bad at protecting. It's great at like stopping a win. You know, an offer you can't refuse on your Demonic Consultation. I don't care that you have more mana afterwards. Your Demonic Consultation is countered. That's what matters.
Yeah.
But it's terrible at protecting your thing because they counterspell your thing. You offer you can't refuse. They say, okay, great. I'll make 2 treasures with one of those treasures. Now I'll cast Swan Song. And you go, fuck, I just gave you the resources. Like, you didn't do anything. You know what I mean? But I like it a little bit more if you want a turbo, if you want to go fast, counter free spell to make 2 treasures, or if you want it as a reactive spell. I want it to stop win conditions. It's good to stop at win conditions.
It is good at stopping win conditions. Like, when you are able to pinpoint the exact thing that you want, especially in a deck that is going to have other counter spells in their hand. Like, Blue Farm plays enough interaction here that, like, they can reasonably have something else just in case they need something else too. So it is kind of nice that like they can use this to help run out shit from your hand so that you're out of resources before they are.
Right. Yeah. Yeah, definitely.
And then that way they'll give you treasures, but you're out of counterspell. So you don't have anything else to do with that. Yeah. There's not really a lot of win conditions in these decks. It's Thassa's Oracle. It's Underworld Breach Lines. And then you can argue, and I do, that Mnemonic Betrayal is also a win condition.
Thassa's Oracle, Demonic Constitution, or Change It Pact. We got Mnemonic Betrayal to take a win condition out of somebody else's graveyards. Underworld Breach with combination of Lion's Eye Diamond and Brain Freeze to mill out our own library, mill out our opponent's libraries, cast a Thassa's Oracle, or run however. Is there Praetor's Grasp in one
there
or two?
There is no Praetor's Grasp in this list in particular.
So sometimes Praetor's Grasp is another option. You Praetor's Grasp for somebody else's Underworld Breach, and then you do the Underworld Breach thing again. What other win conditions does Blue Farm really have access to? That's kind of it, right? Breach with Oracle.
Really?
And they're both together.
And there's variations like Tainted Pact and Grinding Station and stuff like that.
I like Grinding Station and Rock Side. I think
Grinding
it's great.
Station's been impressing me a little bit more recently. But yeah, it's just an insanely strong Underworld Breach deck. I would also like to note,
Not on Gifts Ungiven.
This list in particular is not on Gifts Ungiven.
Interesting. Okay. I would have thought that would have been kind of perfect.
The best home for it, but I feel like Gifts Ungiven is really dropping in popularity.
Yeah. It's kind of weird that like Ad Nauseam is better and you don't want two of that. Intuition is better and it's cheaper. I wonder what the thought process is there. Like, you don't want 3 kind of expensive instant speed draw power. You just need Intuition and Ad Nauseam.
Here's another list that isn't on
it. No Gifts? Maybe it's just bad.
Gifts.
I kind of thought that it would just be a second copy Intuition. It kind of works out that it's just about the same amount of mana.
Yeah, I kind of thought this would have been a shoo-in, but there are some decks that are playing it.
The decks that are
playing it are also on a lot of other things that a lot of these other Blue Farm decks aren't necessarily playing, though, too.
Like what?
When I say that, I just mean that, like, there's so much that you can do with this color combination. Like, all the cards that we talked about, that one list that one didn't play, there's, like, other events that this deck won that does play Vivi and Toxic Deluge and stuff like that. There's so many things that you can do with this deck and still win with. It's not like just because one person won one event without Gifts Ungiven doesn't mean that someone else can win an event with Gifts Ungiven. I just think that we might learn that it's unnecessary.
Yeah.
But it might just depend on, do you want to play into Ad Nauseam or do you want to play into Gifts? Because they're kind of the same.
Yeah, realistically, I think most CDH decks probably have like, honestly, around 10 cards that you can flex in and out. I really think that's the case. That like some it's maybe a little bit less, but depending on the list, 5 to 15 cards can normally come out and you can swap with other cards that you like. I think just the singleton nature, a lot of cards do similar things and it can come down to play style and cards that you're familiar with and lines that you're familiar with. Yeah, so I don't know. I think that's kind of one of the reasons why CDH is so cool is that like the lists aren't exactly 99 for 99. A lot of times, 2 Blue Farm lists can be 15 cards off and it's still basically the same deck. I think it's cool.
Yeah, exactly. That's That's what I like about net decking a deck the first time that I play it, and then swapping out the couple of cards that I know don't fit my play style.
Wheel of Misfortune, gone right away.
Besides
that, I keep it normally as is. Like when someone gives me a list, I'll cut Wheel of Misfortune and then play it as is, and then just as I learn, okay, I still don't like these five cards.
Yeah, like I figure out I don't like this so much, and here's a card that I want to try out, so now I'll slot that in then.
Overall, I don't know. I think CDH is in kind of an awesome place right now. I feel like it's getting talked about like on every week on every time I see on social media, people are talking about what happened to CDH, even non-CDH players.
Which is good. Like even when it's not great stuff, like all press is good press, even bad press is good press.
Yeah.
Take the good with the bad, I guess. So
sometimes,
yeah, that was a bad transition.
I do want to say, do you have any thoughts on like the draw thing? Like CDH is awesome, tournament CDH is awesome, but there does seem like there's a little bit of an issue where like it's kind of easy in tournament situations to force a draw, and the tournaments kind of revolve around the amount of draws that you get. A lot of draws can often get into top 16. Do you care? Does that matter?
I don't care.
Yeah.
I think that the issue helps be mitigated with larger tournaments, though, right? Like the more rounds that you have, the more draws that you have means that the less points that you have. Like,
the more important wins are.
If someone has three wins, how do you get enough draws to match their three wins, right? Like, that's my thought. It's hard to do CEDH tournaments as big two-day events because we're not, like, Pro Tour level events or anything like that.
Yeah.
We don't have a, like, we know some CEDH players that are really good, but we don't have like a whole swath, like a whole Pro Tour size event of players that are all competing at like the same kind of capacity. And I think that a lot of the fixes that people present don't really fix, and they could potentially just cause other problems. I think I'm at a point where I've accepted that CEDH is a bad tournament format, but they're fun to play in, though.
So fat. Yeah, it's so fun.
They're still fun, and I have fun playing in them. And just because it's not the most balanced environment doesn't necessarily mean that... doesn't necessarily mean that there is a fix that's going to make everyone happy. And no matter what you do, I don't think you're going to make everyone happy.
Yeah, that's true.
The other thing is that tournaments are continuing to grow. The tournament that Itali won, I should have said this at the beginning of the episode, is the largest CEDH tournament we've ever had.
Yeah.
It was over 500 people that were there, or at least that registered or something.
Right, yeah. And that's like just the beginning. It's like CEDH is only getting bigger. It's only growing.
I think we have not even begun to peak,
but
I think.
I think you're right in that bigger tournaments is a little bit the fix, because if there's like 7 or 10 rounds of the tournament, then you can't really afford to have a bunch of draws because other players will have had wins and you'll have to have wins to make sure that you can get it. I think that's probably the biggest fix. But then like pretty soon that would make a CDH tournament realistically have to be like a 3-day thing. Day one's Friday, day two Saturday, and then the top 16, since it's untimed and it's CDH, is going to take a long time regardless.
Well, that's the other thing too. I think that the way that I would also like to see it is that I want draws because I want there to be hard stops after the time has been called. Like we've been doing 80 minute rounds, and then 10 or 20 minutes after that round, that turn can go. Like we still do that. That's the last turn. But if that turn's gone on for 20 minutes, the round is ending in a draw.
Game's
I have places to be. As much as I love CEDH tournaments, my home and bed are better than any other place I could ever be.
And the best part about CEDH games is when they end. That's the
best part.
I want the conclusion.
Most fun is winning. And winning doesn't come until the end of the game.
Right, yeah. So, like, the end is the goal. That's what we're looking for, the end of the game. The games have to end, so draws kind of have to exist. A little bit of an argument, like, should they be worth points or not? If they're worth 0 points, then it's less advantageous for you to try to fight for a draw. It still is advantageous for you to fight for a draw because you would rather no one at your table get points than one of your opponents get points and you not get points.
It just helps like your standings overall.
There's a percentage. Like, you can get 1,000 points and then you lose a percentage of your points each round.
I haven't played a tournament that's like that, but I would like to try that one out because the math didn't make sense to me. But the more that I think about it, the more that I think the math does make sense, because it actually helps how tiebreakers work, so that when you lose, you have less points to give. But that's because that's how tiebreakers work. You have to make sure that you're consistently winning. And I kind of think the more that I think about those points percentage things, the more I think I would really like to try a tournament with that style.
Yeah, but realistically, my also and your, I think, thought on this is like... It's just, it is what it is. And that maybe, like, maybe the problem should be fixed. I'm not the one to fix
it. Yeah, and I hate saying that because, like, when a business says, well, this is how we've always done it, I say, fuck you.
Right, of course. Yeah, but, like, I don't know. For me, from my perspective, I just play the game of Magic as it is.
As it's presented.
I don't really want
to
change the game. I'm just playing the game as it is. I don't know. You know what I mean?
And I'm having fun with it.
There are draws.
When I go to a tournament, like, I'm not having a miserable time.
Right, yeah.
Again, I have a skewed view. I play a Tali. I don't go into mid-range.
We also have a skewed view doing this.
We're content creators.
It's different,
yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, for sure, I get that.
From, like, the content creator side, like, I think people play against us differently. Like, they're more inclined to want to come off to us politely and, like, make sure that they have a good interaction with the play-to-win guys, which, I mean, I think that kind of fits our vibe, though, because I'm also socially anxious around them. I'm like, I need to make sure that they have a good time with the play-to-win guys.
Yeah, exactly.
So, at least in the CEDH that I play, which I've already said today is 90% not in tournaments, it's in a really great spot. And even a lot of the tournament CEDH aspects that have come into it, like the politicking, I've had a lot of fun incorporating.
Yeah,
like,
fun.
I talk a lot more in CEDH games. I think it's helped my win percentage a little bit more, too.
Yeah,
so,
definitely.
So, yeah, I've been really enjoying where all of CEDH is at. I think the draws are just kind of a part of it all.
Yeah. Thanks so much for watching. If you'd like to support us directly, you can do so on Patreon, like our $100 patrons.
Damn Nandez, Cumulative Upkeep MTG, Mr. Jerby, The Cardboard Cookbook, Penguin Man 0089, Eli the Magic Guy, David Newman, Pat Fire, Spengler, Demetrius Clark, Larceny, Roy's Your Boy Blue, Sparky B, Insomnia, S.E. Phillip, Olden Groupie, Zach Hartley, Reactive, Sean and the Ice, Gabriel Garrett, Mace the Ace, Luke Cook, Connor Sipon, Joshua Day, Peter Stewart, Corner Wild, Uncle Butts, Noosh, Quadja A. Hamid, Scott Hawk, and Baby G-Bus.
If you want to pick up any of our merch, you can do that at playtowinmtg.com.
Thank you, Dragon Shield, for supporting the show. Use code PlayToWin5 at our affiliate link down below for 5% off.
Follow us on the internet for more content.
Thank you for watching.
See you next time.
Ash Wayne, Hunter the Warlock, John Koba, The Gaming King Kajau, Dan the Man, Sarcastic, Roy Turner, Bill Bob, Mystic Muffin Man, Zachary Coulson, Jabaha, Dalton Poti, Justin Man Solo, Jan Wildfang, Thomas Plano, and David Nelson.
Hey, football fans, Drew Brees here. Kroger Play and Owner's Box have teamed up for the next generation of daily fantasy sports. First-time players can get $25 in free entries, plus 250 fuel points. And you can score all season long with 2x the fuel points for every dollar spent to use at Kroger Fuel Centers. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER.
Void where prohibited. Eligibility restrictions apply. 18+ in most eligible states, but age varies by jurisdiction. Offer is valid between 8/6/25 and 1/5/26. Terms apply. See full terms and conditions at ownersbox.com/footballfuelpointstc.